Welcome to this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up a little bit later in the show today, our news director, Dave Thompson, and I will review this week's news as the legislature gets back at it in Bismarck. Plus, Madeline reviews last Sunday's Academy Awards. Not too surprisingly, Matt did very well in his Oscar predictions. And we begin Main Street today with an excerpt from our Prairie Pulse television show. Dr. Brad Kohotek is a physician with Sanford Health in Fargo and also practices at the Sanford Weight Management Clinic. He joined Prairie Public's CEO John Harris on a recent edition of Prairie Pulse to discuss the benefits and risks of popular weight loss medications like Ozempic and Wegovy.
Joining me now, our guest is Sanford Health physician, Dr. Brad Kohotek. Dr. Kohotek, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, as we always get started, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm Dr. Kohotek. I'm a staff psychiatrist at Sanford Health, and I also spend just about half of my time in our eating disorders and weight management clinic. A little bit about me personally, I spent my early years in Lidgerwood, North Dakota, to call Wahpeton my hometown. Graduated from high school there, attended NDSCS before going up to NDSU for my bachelor's degree, then attended UND for medical school. After medical school, I did general psychiatry training, also through the University of North Dakota. Graduated in 2013, and I've been a staff psychiatrist since then. Then in 2019, started pursuing further education in obesity management. And in 2022, I became a diplomat of the American Board of Obesity Medicine.
Of course, we asked you to come today, sort of a topic that you hear a lot about, at least in ads and things, over the last few years, weight loss drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy. Can you talk some about how they were developed, maybe the science behind them, and how they were approved?
When we talk about medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, really we're talking about a class of medications called GLP-1s. And actually, GLP-1s have been out for quite some time. They were originally developed actually for treatment of type 2 diabetes. The first one of these was a medication called Xanatide, which was actually FDA approved back in 2005. It didn't take long for us to learn, though, that not only do these medications help manage diabetes, but they can be helpful in weight loss. And so over the years, many new medications have been FDA approved for that reason. Recently, we've had kind of a uptick of medications that were approved for this indication. In 2017, semaglutide, which is Ozempic, was approved for diabetes. Later in 2021, that became approved under the brand name Wegovy for obesity management. Then more recently, kind of the newer medication that we have is tirzepatide. That was FDA approved for diabetes in 2022, followed shortly after by its approval for weight management in 2023 under the brand name Zepbound.
In the grand scheme of things, these are relatively new approvals, 17 and 22. So what specifically do they do? What do they do to the human body?
Well, that's a good question, and actually I should go back a little bit. Actually, the first one of these that was approved for weight management was back in 2014 under the brand name Saxenda. But what do they actually do in the body? It's a great question, and what these medications are is they're called incretin mimetics, meaning they work on a hormone that's naturally, or they work like a hormone that's naturally produced in the gut. And we think about, you know, how do they work for weight loss? I really think about they do three different things. And this is kind of a very simplistic view of what they do. The first one is they help your body use energy more efficiently. So they help your pancreas secrete insulin in response to a meal, and they help reduce glycogen, which is a kind of a storage form of glucose that we all have. So that's the important part as far as, you know, energy metabolism. Now, as far as weight loss, they also do two additional things. So it slows transit of food through your gut, so you feel fuller faster after you eat. And also, they work on your appetite center in the hypothalamus, so helps you not be as hungry and feel full or have satiety after a smaller meal.
You work at the Sanford Health Weight Management Clinic. So can you expand on what goes on there, and have you been inundated with requests for these drugs? We always say, boy, we'd like to have a magic pill and be the perfect
right
weight. But and now maybe there is something to do that. So tell us more about the management clinic.
Yeah, so I work in the Eating Disorders and Weight Management Clinic at Samford. And really what that is a multidisciplinary team whose main focus is to assess patients' weight and their health factors, things like that, with the ultimate goal of helping patients to manage obesity. We have a multidisciplinary team that consists of psychologists. We have other prescribers like myself of various backgrounds. We have RN health coaches, registered dietitians, our regular nursing staff, and non-clinical support staff all helping us for that one goal. As far as being inundated with requests, we've always been a very busy clinic. But what I would say is that there is kind of new enthusiasm out there with these new tools that are coming to market, that we are fielding more and more questions and getting more interest for these new medications.
Well, talking about Ozempic and other, understand, and they're costly. Am I correct there? And even with insurance, and can maybe you explain how it works?
Yeah, they can be very costly. So you were paying for these out-of-pocket full costs. They can be upwards of $1,000 to $1,300 a month. Now, thankfully, some insurances do cover them, and the amount of coverage can vary. I have patients who have a very minimal copay, some patients who have to pay 50% of that. And, 50% of a lot of money is still quite a bit of money. And so unfortunately, in some cases, they are not cost effective.
What are the benefits of Ozempic, Wegovy, or a drug like this?
So the benefits are vast, and we're learning more and more about these medications all the time. Not only benefits as far as, treatment of diabetes and obesity, but we've actually had some expanded indications for some of the GLP-1s recently, because we're finding that they can benefit other conditions. Good examples of that would be we had tirzepatide, which was FDA approved for management of sleep apnea. Semaglutide, otherwise known as Ozempic or Wegovy, was FDA approved for cardiovascular risk reduction in patients with a known history of cardiovascular disease. And then more recently, as of about a week ago, there was another FDA indication for semaglutide to help protect against further renal disease in patients with a history of diabetes and kidney problems.
Let's flip the coin. What are the downsides to taking them, side effects, long-term effects, things like that, and maybe even things we don't know yet?
I think what's reassuring is like I said initially, that, these medications have been out for some time, so we know a lot about them. But that being said, there are some side effects, and occasionally we have people who have, significant side effects enough that we have to stop the medication. Now, the more common side effects would be gastrointestinal in nature, so things like nausea, vomiting, changes in stool habits. There are also some more what I would call rare complications that have been reported, so things like pancreatitis, gallbladder issues, kidney problems in the context of vomiting and dehydration, things like that thankfully are rare and that we monitor for, and so we don't see them very often.
Can these medications actually trigger or cause eating disorders, or of course have unintended consequences?
That's also a very good question, and I can tell you that there's a lot of study right now looking at that. When people think eating disorders, a lot of times the first thing that comes to mind is anorexia, being very low weighted. We think the risk of that is very low, but the study is ongoing. What I see more in clinical practice is a different eating disorder that's much more common. We know that from previous studies, we know that about 30% of patients who present to a weight management clinic have a condition called binge eating disorder. And that has actually been studied with the GLP-1s. And preliminary data shows that actually the GLP-1s can really help normalize eating behaviors and help those patients lose weight as well.
Do doctors know what causes various kinds of eating disorders, or is it just an individual by individual case?
Eating disorders are considered to be multifactorial, meaning that there are different contributions, things like biology or genetics, as well as environmental factors and sometimes personality factors. We also know that there are some risk factors for developing eating disorders. Certainly a positive family history, comorbid psychiatric issues like depression, previous trauma, stress, and then things like weight bullying and extreme dieting can also be risk factors.
Your medical recommendation to someone interested in these medications who's a patient of yours, do you suggest other options first, or how do you go about that?
My initial recommendation is the same for every patient, and that is be ready to make some changes, or at least be open to changes. When they studied these medications for weight loss, what they don't advertise is that they studied them along with diet, calorie-restricted diet, and physical activity. And so being ready to make those changes is helpful. As far as medication selection, we really have to look at the whole patient individually and see if they're a candidate for those types of medications.
Is there a stigma out there for people who have a significant weight loss in a short period of time? You know, are people less likely to admit they took Ozempic because it's considered maybe a shortcut?
I think there's some of that, you know, I see it both ways. So we have some people who are reluctant to talk about how they've lost the weight. I would say, though, on the other side, I actually hear from my patients that, you know, they've been working very hard, you know, with lifestyle changes. They've used this very important tool that we have to lose weight, and people aren't asking them about it. And they're like, wait a minute, isn't anyone noticing? And I think people are reluctant to ask for that reason as well.
Can you tell us about any success stories without revealing any patient information, obviously?
Yeah, you know, that's why I love this type of practice, is because we have success stories every day. And, you know, these medications, yes, they're new, but we've had medications to assist with weight loss since the 50s. And so we do have a lot of success stories. And I would say these newer medications do tend to have more magnitude as far as the amount of weight that people can lose. So it's a really exciting time to be doing this type of work.
And again, flip the coin, what about some cautionary tales that maybe, you know, there's got to be stories of that also out there?
There are, you know, and we have had patients who have had to stop the medication due to side effects. You know, thankfully, we don't see very often significant complications simply because we're doing a good job of A, educating our patients up front, you know, telling them, you know, what to expect and what some of the warning signs of those rare complications would be. And then we're doing a really nice job of managing them.
So how about somebody who gets on the product? You know, how does one keep the weight off once the medication kicks in? Or is this something that you have to continue on forever, I guess, or for consistently?
Yeah, it's a great question. So all of the GLP-1s that are approved for weight management have been approved for long-term weight maintenance, meaning that it's recommended that you stay on them long-term. We know from recent studies that the risk of weight regain after stopping them is quite high. One study showed that patients who stopped the medication, within the first year, two-thirds of them have gained a significant amount of the weight back.
Copycat drugs or medications out there, are there some? And of course, I would say that have not been approved by the FDA.
Yes. You know, I'm always cautious. You know, it doesn't take long in a Google search to find somebody claiming to have, you know, a GLP-1 in their, you know, whatever product. And I certainly recommend shying away from those. Now, there are what some would consider copycat medications out there called compounds. And actually, we use those quite frequently, and they do have a role in treatment of obesity, especially when patients can't access the FDA-approved versions. Now, compounded medications are produced by licensed compounding pharmacies, and so they can be used safely in a subset of patients.
Maybe a tough question here, but there's been a lot of progress over the years in body image acceptance. You know, how do you balance that with the fact that things like morbid obesity is actually unhealthy?
I think the word is balance. There's been a lot of good things that have come out of the body positivity movement. You know, we know that having a good self-image is important for people's general health and well-being. But that also has to be balanced with what we know are the risks of having the disease of obesity. I think we're doing a good job of addressing the bias of obesity, not only in healthcare, but in general. But we also have to keep doing a good job at educating people on their health and making sure they're making the right choices and keeping that balance.
You talked about having to stay on the drug long term, but, you know, just in weight loss in general, whether it's Weight Watchers, Eat Healthy, Heart Healthy, isn't it usually a lifestyle change that you have to accept and follow no matter what you do?
Yes, that's a very good point. And again, you know, when these medications are studied, the two main components are that, yes, a calorie-reduced diet, and there are certain diets that may be recommended based on whatever medical comorbidity you have, and an increase in activity. And you're right, so those are extremely important.
So what got you interested in the area of study, weight management issues, and eating disorders?
Yeah, so, as part of my training as a psychiatrist, we spend a lot of time in eating disorders. I more so learned after I started practice in 2013 that unfortunately, many of the medications that we use in psychiatry actually cause weight gain. And so I actually really found myself wanting to help my patients avoid weight gain. You know, prevention is key. And then look to ways to manage that as well. So that's really what triggered my interest.
With that said, somebody comes to you wanting to lose weight, whether it's a few pounds or a lot of pounds. How do you approach it? What's your first recommendations?
Lifestyle change. That is always the recommendation. And then, you know, we really look at the patient as an individual. We look at what are their medical comorbidities and try to figure out what tools do we have that can help them. And sometimes it's not medication. And we've had patients be very successful even without these new meds.
Where do you think in 5 years on medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, where are they going to be? What's going to be going on? Will there be more of them or less? What do you think?
Yeah, so as a psychiatrist, people think I can read minds, which I can't, and I also can't predict the future. But a quick Google search here shows that there are about 16 new medications in the pipeline that are, you know, in development, being studied for, you know, what the drug company hopes is an eventual approval for obesity management. You know, my hope is that we have more options for patients, different delivery methods, meaning, gosh, it would be nice to have an oral option for some patients. You know, not everybody likes a shot once a day or once a week. So my hope is that we're going to have more delivery options, more competition, which will hopefully drive costs down and just ultimately better access for patients.
Real quick, what's the best thing about your job?
I think seeing the success stories and getting to know my patients, it's just great. You know, we work with a lot of good people.
People would like more information about this topic we've talked about today or these medications. Where's the best place for them to go? Who can they contact?
They can certainly contact us over at the Eating Disorders Weight Management Clinic. The number is 701-234-4111. Another good place to start is having a conversation with your primary care provider. Many of our providers are comfortable assessing the causes of obesity and doing some treatment, or they're happy to refer to us as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for all the great information.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was John Harris, the CEO of Prairie Public, in an excerpt from his Prairie Pulse television show. John's guest was Dr. Brad Kohotek from Sanford Health. Prairie Pulse is a weekly public affairs show on the television service of Prairie Public that features a long-form studio interview with regional newsmakers, artists, or authors. The show also features a short story or profile of a regional artist or a performance from a regional musician or band. Welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. The United States Department of Agriculture has sharply cut its workforce, employees, and researchers across states including Nebraska, Iowa, Oklahoma, and Kansas have left their jobs, although the agency has not said just how many employees it's laid off. Among the impacted facilities is the National Center for Agricultural Utilization Research in Peoria, Illinois. Commonly called the Egg Lab, it's where government scientists discovered the process, among other things, to mass-produce penicillin. And as Harvest Public Media reports, current and former employees say the layoffs will cripple research and efforts that help farmers.
Jeannie Klein-Gordon is one of thousands of probationary employees across a swath of government agencies impacted by the Trump administration's efforts to reduce the federal workforce. She worked in ag research in Oregon and Michigan before moving her family to Peoria in 2023 to take a job with the Ag Lab. Her focus, to find ways to fight red crown rot, a newly arrived threat to the Illinois soybean industry.
I spent 11 and a half years getting to this position. And I got the position of my dreams.
In late January, the U.S. Office of Personnel Management sent the widely reported fork in the road emails, offering several months' pay to federal workers in return for a resignation. Klein-Gordon says she wasn't interested, even after another email went out in early February, pointedly identifying probationary workers like herself. Then she says there was a meeting on February 13th, warning employees termination might be coming.
But nobody knew for sure whether it was going to come. And so we were like, okay, refresh your email. Okay, let's refresh your email. And it hit people at different times. And so I was like, did you get one?
The letter that probationary employees received on the evening of February 13th read in part, "The agency finds, based on your performance, that you have not demonstrated that your further employment at the agency would be in the public interest." And these letters went out to USDA research facilities across the Midwest. Dozens of employees were laid off in Ames, Iowa, at least 17 in Clay Center, Nebraska, and about a dozen more in Manhattan, Kansas, according to local reports.
The federal government has a system built where there is a year to 2 year period where the employee can be terminated fairly easily.
Ethan Roberts is the union president of Local 3247 of the American Federation of Government Employees, which represents more than 80 Peoria Ag Lab workers. He says probationary staff have fewer protections, but there's still procedures that should be followed.
It has to be for a cause. They cannot just be dismissed without cause.
The Trump administration has slashed the federal workforce across several agencies in what they call an effort to improve government efficiency. In a statement, a USDA spokesperson emphasized that newly confirmed Secretary Brooke Rollins supports the measures. At the Ag Lab, Roberts knows of 12 union employees and about 20 total employees who were terminated. That's more than 10% of the facility's staff.
There are projects now that are simply left hanging. There's no one to continue the experiments that were being performed. There was one unit that had half of its staff just suddenly cut. There's no telling what is going to happen to all of those projects.
Klein-Gordon was just starting an experiment when she was laid off. She has no idea what will become of the data or the project, but she knows her work had a direct impact on farmers.
I put what I felt was my heart and soul into my job and serving stakeholders, serving our growers and their best interests and their needs. And it is a slap in the face to be treated this way.
The American Federation of Government Employees, along with several other unions representing federal employees, say the layoffs were illegal. They filed suit February 19th. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Colin Shope.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms throughout the Midwest and Great Plains, which reports on food systems, environment, and rural life. Founded and based at KCUR, Harvest Public Media serves stations in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and here in North Dakota. Coming up in the second half of Main Street today, Dave Thompson will have our weekly review of the North Dakota news, and Matt Olean and I will review his Oscar predictions. Here's a director's note, Matt did pretty well. That's all ahead on Main Street right after this.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative, headquartered in Bismarck, a Touchstone Energy cooperative, generating and delivering electricity to over 3 million consumers in 9 states, spanning from the Canadian to Mexican border.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Gather round, everybody.
The walk-up music that lets us know it's Thursday and it's time to review the news with Prairie Public's veteran news director, Dave Thompson. Dave, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you, Craig.
Legislature is now back in town. They've had their crossover time, Dave. Mm-hmm. What was your biggest surprise this week relative to the legislature?
The biggest surprise is that they are not gaveling in until Friday because they want to keep 2 extra days. They're getting paid for the committee hearings they're doing, but they're not actually on the floor. That does not count as a legislative day unless you gavel in. So they're going to gavel in on Friday.
Keep a couple days in the pocket, yeah. So to speak.
You bet.
Dave, the North Dakota Supreme Court denied a petition to move the Greenpeace trial to a different court. What's the latest there?
Well, basically, I know Greenpeace wanted to move it to Fargo. The feeling was that people in Western North Dakota are more sympathetic, perhaps, to the pipeline. So they wanted to move it to Fargo, and the judge said no. And also, media had asked for, you know, the idea that you could live stream it and that you wouldn't have to be in the courtroom and you could do video and audio, and the Supreme Court agreed with the judge, said no. Things are status quo with that trial, which may, I understand, take up to 6 weeks.
We'll keep an eye on that for sure. Dave, there's a change that may be coming in leasing rules for state-owned property, mm-hmm. and this is an offshoot of maybe some work that's planned in Jamestown.
Absolutely what's happened. It is part of the budget bill for Health and Human Services. They could only have a 2-year lease, and the House passed a 99-year lease possibility for land like this. This goes back a few sessions to the idea of what they called Bison World, which would be kind of an amusement and theme park. They've actually testified on behalf of Bison World again in this session, so this might be an indication that they want the project to start moving along and getting it going.
And the idea there is we can't do significant improvements if we just have a 2-year lease.
That is correct. And if you got a 2-year lease, what happens when they cancel after 2 years?
Dave, you posted on Prairie Public's website a rhetorical question, I think. Can the North Dakota governor threaten a veto?
Absolutely. That's a fun little part of North Dakota's Constitution. In Article 5, Section 10, it prohibits a governor from threatening to veto bills in the legislature this way. Basically says that you cannot actually threaten a legislator. Kind of decided that it was going to be that a governor cannot threaten a veto until a veto is done. As the governor says, he actually basically talked to the legislature to tell them his feelings on particular bills without using the V word. And, you know, he'd served in the legislature before, so he knew exactly how things work there.
I don't see anything on the horizon that may garner a veto this year. Do you?
Not really. Probably not at this point. However, we're only at the second period of the session. People say second half. I say second period, because they might come up with an amendment in another house on a bill that passed the first house, and then the first house approves the amendment, and the governor doesn't like it, he may veto the bill or use his line item veto power to get rid of the amendment.
Dave, let's talk about minimum wage. There's a resolution that got a House hearing. What's the latest?
Well, this is a bill that has been introduced probably every session that I've been to in my 22 sessions to set a higher minimum wage. And North Dakota's right now is set down $7.25 because that's a federal requirement. And a representative from Fargo wants to make it $9.25, but then would put this thing in the Constitution to raise the minimum wage every year and adjust it for an increase in the cost of living. So it probably doesn't have a shelf life, but they keep trying.
Dave, this was also heard in my tenure with the Wyoming legislature, and people chuckle when I tell them Wyoming state minimum wage is just $5.15 an hour. And people say, well, geez, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. That overrules stuff, doesn't it? And the answer is, for many local businesses that don't meet the Fair Labor Standards Act requirements For the number of employees, employers in Wyoming don't have to pay that federal minimum wage, although quite honestly, I don't think there are many examples of what that is. But it always perplexed me why Wyoming didn't at least raise their minimum wage to at least the federal minimum wage.
Yeah, and in North Dakota, you have people and businesses who are advertising well above the minimum wage looking for workers. That's our worker shortage in North Dakota. You have fast food restaurants who are offering $15 to $18 an hour right now. You know, how does this apply to tipped employees? You know, that's another question on this whole thing.
Dave, for Indian Country, federal cuts now are coming into focus, and some believe that it could decimate some core tribal programs.
And this is going to be an interesting, perhaps legal question that might go to the U.S. Supreme Court on that, because some of these are treaty things, or are based on treaties with the tribes. There's some angst, I'll put it that way, in tribal governments about what's going to happen to these federal dollars, which they do rely on.
Dave, a Fargo lawmaker has now called for hearings on the state's impact relative to federal funding cuts.
Absolutely. I had a chance to talk to Senator Mathern about this, and he says what he'd like to do is get the legislature's appropriators together and have agencies give like 10-minute presentation about what these federal cuts are going to mean. And he says if they don't do that, they're likely going to be back in special session later this year as agencies and the state has to deal with budget cuts. So he's like trying to take a proactive approach to get some things accomplished now.
Dave, there was a poll recently commissioned by the North Dakota News Cooperative that talked about whether the public thought the legislature got it right when they rejected free school meals. What did that poll find?
Oh, boy. You know, basically about 70% said the rejection of the funding of school meals for all K-12 students was the wrong decision, which is very interesting because some of the reasons that legislators used for rejecting it says, you know, we don't want to pay rich people, you know, rich people's kids to have lunch at school or to have breakfast at school. But the argument is that, you know, a Fed student is a good student. And I will tell you that there might be some possible tweaks yet that could happen. And I'm thinking about an amendment to the DPI budget bill. Watch that. I think they'll use some of these poll results and say, well, maybe we want to revisit this. So I think this is going to be one of those things that's going to be like hanging around till the end of the session and probably be one of the last bills voted on.
Dave, what are we going to be talking about next Thursday?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I think you're going to be talking more about some of these constitutional amendments that have come up regarding what legislators can and cannot do. There's a fight over that, about whether legislators can amend a section of the Constitution, which an initiated measure said they could not. And I think you're going to have some funding, interesting discussions with the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation because, you know, the Attorney General is really pushing this truth in sentencing bill and basically has put a little target on the back of DOCR saying DOCR is letting go earlier than what judges think they should be let go. So watch that one carefully.
Dave Thompson and I, we review the news each and every Thursday here on Main Street. Dave, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Josh Beauchet, broker and realtor with Real Broker LLC. With a team of agents serving homebuyers, sellers, and investors throughout North Dakota, the Detroit Lakes area, and northwest Minnesota. Josh can be reached at 701-367-3513.
We've heard the fanfare. Matt Olean now joins us in the Main Street studio. This will be the event we've been looking forward to. We'll see how good Matt was at predicting the results in the Oscars, the Academy Awards, which were held last weekend. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Hi, Craig.
All right, Matt. By my accounts, in the top six categories, you did awfully well. You batted .666. That's pretty good. If I were a baseball player, anybody would take that, but you were right. We were talking about Enora on Monday.
Yo. 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 Did you pick up milk?
Do you see milk in the fridge?
No.
Then I didn't pick up the milk.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Annie.
You don't have cash. Let's go to the
so loud and in private room.
I got a kid who wants someone who speaks Russian.
My Russian is terrible. I can't even roll my R's.
No.
Я просто хотел тебе предложить. Ты хочешь быть эксклюзивно со мной?
15. Cash up front.
Deal.
Deal.
If I get married to an American, I wouldn't have to go back to Russia.
Okay, so who'd you marry? And do you, Nora, take this handsome gentleman?
Да я был с ним две недели назад буквально. Он не жена.
Well, you did tell them, right?
Иван-Джан, открой дверь, пожалуйста.
Ваня, should I call 911?
Ты женился на какой-то проститутке?
What?
Это она? Иван! Иван!
Like, what do you do to get all of this?
I am telling you, you do not know this guy. It's a fraud marriage, and we're getting
a
in an old ASAP.
That's a nice guy.
Vanya, be a man and talk to me.
What is that? Is that a butterfly?
Yeah, it's a butterfly.
You're so classy.
I know.
I got dollar signs like a real hoe.
So as the night wore on, though, I thought to myself, Mikey Madison's going to win because Honora was winning a lot of awards. And you're looking for trends, Craig, watching this show. And, you know, the substance got makeup. But I was happy that Mikey Madison won. But, yes, big night for Honora. Sean Baker becomes the first person in Oscar history to win four Oscars in one night for the same movie because he edited the show, too. So he got screenplay, best picture, best director. And he physically edited the whole thing himself as well. So big night for Honora. I know it's a film a lot of people did not see. This is not, you know, a blockbuster Titanic, Oppenheimer-type movie that a lot of people saw. But I saw it the first weekend. It came out in October, and it struck me right then. And as things kind of changed through Oscar season with Wicked and Emilia Perez were kind of maybe the early favorites to win, but that just didn't happen for either one of them. It became clear that Honora was the favorite and the darling of the Academy. It's an unusual movie. I encourage people to see it. It's maybe not for everyone. There's a lot of sex in there. There's a lot of swearing. But it is kind of this crazy madcap comedy adventure about this sex worker played by Mikey Madison, who plays Honora. A lot of crazy supporting characters in there, too. So I think they made the right choice if I was voting. I was not thrilled that Adrian Brody beat Timothy Chalamet. As you know, I've kind of talked about this a little bit on the show. If you're going to win a second Oscar and now Brody has two, I'd like to see some variance in the two performances. And, you know, I've chatted about this with my friends. There's not a lot of difference between who he played in The Brutalist versus who he played in The Pianist. You know, it's a Holocaust survivor. You know, and that's a great story. It's a moving story, but he kind of played a variation on the same part. And Chalamet, you know, studied for 3 years to play Bob Dylan. I think the performance difficulty was more in Chalamet's corner, and he got the SAG, but just did not ever quite beat Brody enough at the BAFTAs and some of the critics' organizations leading up to it. And I'm still kind of baffled. I'm just kind of baffled why Chalamet didn't win. It had every mark checked of what an Oscar-winning performance should be, and it just didn't happen. The two supporting performances, we nailed those. Kieran Culkin, Zoe Saldana were pretty much locks to win that. And as I said with Best Actress, I was happy Mikey Madison won. I'm not a huge fan of The Substance. You know, I think the makeup really helped Demi Moore a lot as in the second half of that movie. Not that she wasn't good in the part, but I think they made the right pick with Actress. I think they made the wrong pick with Best Actor, even though Brody is good in The Brutalist. I just don't see a second Oscar for him.
How did you think the show went overall? How did Conan O'Brien do as host?
Oh, I thought he was very funny. This is what he's used to. He's used to hosting these shows. I thought the jokes landed pretty well. You know, the show got long. It's 3 hours, 45 minutes. That's why they're now starting it at 6 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Los Angeles time, which is crazy that it starts that early. But it has to, because the show, there's so many awards they have to get through, and there's musical numbers and, you know, Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo right off the bat doing that. The singing duet was great. I enjoyed Mick Jagger coming out to present Best Song. I think that was a surprise. People got a kick out of that. And you see how he just kind of skipped across the stage? I challenge you to find an 81-year-old man in better shape in the world than he is. I enjoyed the Gene Hackman tribute by Morgan Freeman. The soundbite they played at the end of the In Memoriam, where Hackman talks from Uncommon Valor about, if we meet again, we'll smile, and if not, this parting was well made. That's a perfect way to end it. So, yeah, I think overall the show was decent and good. I enjoyed the Adam Sandler bit, you know, with Conan O'Brien as well.
Chalamet.
Yep. If only that could have meant he won the Oscar. But
oh, no, wouldn't that have been great?
Yes.
All right, Matt, if you were to change the Academy Awards in any way, what would you do?
I think 10 nominations is too many for Best Picture. I've had a lot of people kind of comment on that to me. I had a friend that didn't even know they were up to 10 nominations because they just don't pay attention to the Oscars. The last time there were 5 nominees for Best Picture was 2008. I'm okay with it being more than 5, but I think 10 gets maybe a little high. I don't know where the number, I don't know where the sweet spot is between 5 and 10. That's the problem. So maybe that gets a little bit too many Best Picture nominees. But overall, you know, it's hard to know what to change about the show, and people complain about the show every year. I've come to this conclusion, Craig. The Oscars are really a show for cinephiles like me, and maybe people that want to check out Conan's monologue and some other funny things. It used to be, you know, primetime viewing for everybody in the country, because you had three or four channels. Now there's so many viewing options. And quite frankly, a lot of people didn't see Anora. A lot of people didn't see Emilia Perez or I'm Still Here or The Brutalist. And so, you know, to have a high viewership for a show like this when people didn't really see a lot of the movies is going to be tricky. I think last year with Barbie and Oppenheimer, my guess is when the ratings come in, the ratings will have been higher last year. I'm pretty safe predicting that.
All right, Matt, what do you have coming down the road for us here on your weekly movie reviews on Main Street?
Well, Captain America: Brave New World, I finally saw that. I will review that next week. And as you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has struggled since Avengers Endgame to kind of find their footing with this new kind of cast of people. And Anthony Mackie now assumes the role of Captain America, so we'll talk about that. I am going to finally see Nickel Boys, and we'll talk about that in a few weeks. That's, of course, the movie that the only one of the 10 Oscar-nominated Best Picture nominees that I did not see, but I do have access to it now, and we'll talk about that. And then this is kind of the dead year for, you know, releases. You get a lot of films released in March and April. Probably are not going to be Oscar nominees, but we'll still keep going to see them.
Matt, the Academy Award trivia part of our show is right now, and this is one that's related to something we just spoke of earlier. I'm not sure that you're going to get this one, Matt. I'm setting you up here. What Academy Awards were the most watched on television?
I will say the year Titanic won, 1998.
My gosh.
Did I get it?
You are brilliant, Matt. That's right. It had 57.25 million viewers, and it was most popular because it did feature Titanic. And last year's, just for comparison, had about 19.5 million viewers on television.
Yeah, it's crazy how it's just dropped over the years, and I think that's just a sign of the times.
Your knowledge is unprecedented, Matt. We've been to the movies again with Matt Olean. Thanks for joining us on Main Street.
You bet.
Hi, I'm Rick Gion, Major Gifts Manager here at Prairie Public. When you give to Prairie Public, you hear your donation at work. Your generosity helps everyone in the Prairie region have access to programs that educate, involve, and inspire. If you'd like to pay Prairie Public forward in an even more impactful way, I invite you to join our Investors Circle. It's a group of members who care deeply about Prairie Public and who want quality, non-commercial programming and fact-driven news to touch even more people in our communities. Become an Investor Circle member right now with a gift of $1,200 or more annually or at $100 per month. Go to prairiepublic.org/support for more details. And thank you for caring about Prairie Public.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for March 6th. When Franklin D. Roosevelt stepped into the White House on March 4th, 1933, the country was gripped by the Great Depression. Bank failures and record unemployment were ravaging the nation. Roosevelt knew Americans wanted a confident president who could lead them through the storm, and he was determined to hit the ground running. One of Roosevelt's early plans to counteract the Depression was the establishment of the Civil Works Administration, or the CWA. The CWA was designed to create jobs for unemployed Americans. From the beginning, Roosevelt intended it to be a temporary program, offering immediate relief during the winter of 1933 and 34. The CWA provided construction jobs to improve or build buildings, roads, and bridges. Rural areas, including North Dakota, benefited the most. Grand Forks County was able to put over 2,000 people on the payroll thanks to the program. Although the CWA employed 4 million workers, critics claimed there was nothing of permanent value in the program. Roosevelt responded, saying the criticism reinforced his original vision of the CWA as a temporary solution. He announced the program would end in March of 1934, but not everyone agreed with ending it. With increased employment and improvements across the state, North Dakota objected to the program's end. On this date in 1934, the Bismarck Tribune reported that North Dakotans had sent a resolution to President Roosevelt protesting the proposed end of the CWA. The resolution warned of starvation and misery without it. The CWA ended in November of 1934, but it was not the end of aid to North Dakota. The program was a precursor to the Works Progress Administration, or the WPA, which picked up where the CWA left off. Schools were improved in Valley City and Wishick. A swimming pool was built in Oaks. The city hall and beach was upgraded. Communities across the state saw new water and sewage systems, libraries, baseball diamonds, parks, city halls, and courthouses. Though the CWA isn't as well known as the WPA, it laid the groundwork for the public works projects that helped pull the country out of the Great Depression. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota. I've been listening to your show.
Listening to Prairie Public right now, so I bet you're a bit of a news junkie, right? But do you also like music? Well, I bet you do. Prairie Public is the place for that too. Did you know that we have a guy named Mike Olson who spins adult album alternative music during the week?
And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play.
He's got an endless library, limitless musical knowledge, and a clever way of handcrafting sets of songs. You can listen to Prairie Public's Roots Rock and Jazz stream on an app or a smart speaker pretty much anywhere, and on an HD radio anywhere in the region. Check out Mike Olson on Prairie Public weekdays from 9 a.m. to 10 and noon to 6 p.m.
And that's a wrap for today's edition of Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us. Remember, you can hear this and all past episodes of Main Street at our website at prairiepublic.org. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, we'll air The Middle with host Jeremy Hobson. This week's topic, the battle over trans rights. And at 7 p.m. Central on Friday, we'll air Science Friday with Ira Flato. Monday on Main Street, we'll visit with author Karen Russell about her second novel, The Antidote, a magical realist tale set in 1930s Nebraska during the Dust Bowl, where a prairie witch who stores people's unwanted memories a resilient farmer, his basketball-playing niece, and a photographer with a time-traveling camera confront personal and collective histories amid environmental and social upheaval. That's an interview I am really looking forward to. Until then, we hope you have a great North Dakota weekend and can join us Monday right back here on Main Street.